Good morning. How are you everybody doing today? Thank you all for being here. My name is Curtis Jones, and I would just like to start off by saying how thankful I am for the opportunity to speak to you today about a very important journey that this fellowship has chosen to take. Some of you still may be a little apprehensive as to what this means or the changes that may occur to our fellowship, bylaws, or to our services. Being a welcoming and inclusive congregation means consciously working to find ways to name, honor, and value experiences and identities that are usually minimized or devalued. It means uncovering our unconscious assumptions that what's normal and who is present in our community, and opening ourselves to the possibility of greater diversity in order for us each to feel welcome and included in faith communities, we need to see ourselves reflected and present in some way. Using inclusive language does not just mean using affirming and non-discriminating statements. Although that is certainly a good first step, inclusive language is mindful of the ways that our language often unconsciously makes assumptions that people and unintentionally reinforces dominant norms around gender, sexual orientation, race, class, ability, disability, age, and other identity and experiences. To feel welcome in your congregation, members of oppressed groups need to know that the congregation is aware of their issues and that they are welcome as their full selves. When people who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, and are transgendered first come to your congregation, they may be uneasy until they know they are welcome. Many religious denominations and individual churches are actively hostile to and condemning of the LGBT community, ignore them, and are claimed to treat everyone the same regardless of sexual orientation and gender identity expression. Refusing to acknowledge that LGBT people face additional issues in society and around matters of faith and religion. Because of this, many people who are marginalized on the basis of sexual orientation and or gender identity people will assume that you and your congregation don't want them unless you clearly invite them in. Little things are often the most important. What really make people feel welcome and what will make them want to return is inclusion in all aspects of church life. You can make it clear that they are welcome without their ever having to ask. Extending your welcome to the LGBT community is just one entry point into the conversation about how to truly be a welcoming congregation. LGBT people, like all people, have multifaceted identities. There are people of color, they are working class, they have disabilities, they are immigrants, they are children and youth and single parents and elders. Emphasize the interrelatedness of all forms of oppression and weave this into everything that your congregation does. Explore how homophobia, transphobia affect people with multiple oppressed identities differently. Imagine a world in which your life appears only as a negative. Imagine that wherever you hear your life mentioned, it is with a laugh or a sneer, in a whisper or an apologetic tone of voice. Imagine that you have lived with the person you love for years and have never heard in school, on television, in popular films, in your family, in your religious community, your life circumstances addressed, affirmed, or possibly reflected back to you. That this is changing, even slightly, is due to 25 years of work in bisexual, gay, lesbian, and transgender communities, and with the understanding of non-gay people. Bisexual, gay, lesbian, and or transgendered people have been oppressed for centuries, and from time to time are still publicly harassed, beaten, and even killed because of their identity. We often live in danger of losing our jobs, being evicted from our homes, being shunned by our families. Most religious institutions reject us publicly. Many bisexual, gay, lesbian, and/or transgendered people assume that they will be rejected in Unitarian Universalist congregations as well, unless we actively show them that they are welcome. Nowhere is this more important than on Sunday mornings when the whole church gathers to explore and affirm our Unitarian Universalist faith and to welcome newcomers. I remember when this program was brought to our attention. I went to the UU website to research this program, and the information seemed to be overwhelming. It was just such a big thing. And I just want to thank you, UU. I didn't realize we were that complex of a people. But when Al and I sat down to discuss if we would like to take on such a big and important project, I was a little reluctant. I blamed my hesitation on my work schedule and my daily commute, but this was not entirely true. I was more concerned with how the fellowship would embrace this program. You see, I wouldn't make a very good activist. I worry too much about hurting someone else's feelings. So being gay, it's often difficult to find a church where you can be accepted for who you truly are. There are a lot of churches out there that are open to the LGBT community, but not necessarily welcoming. Al and I are truly fortunate to have found such a wonderful and open group of people to be able to grow our spiritual selves with. Now, I finished a little early, but I would like to close my readings out with a poem that I read in our last workshop. And it is from another workshop series called Building the World We Dream About. And this workshop series also touches base on discrimination towards racism, classism, age, and everything else. So this poem here was written by an anonymous gay high school student. And UU has adopted it into the curriculum. So, and the name of this poem is called Mattering. My father asked if I am gay. I asked, does it matter? He said, no, not really. I said, yes. He said, get out of my life. I guess it mattered. My friend asked, why I talk about race so much? I asked, does it matter? He said, no, not really. I told him, yes. He said, you need to get that chip off your shoulder. I guess it mattered. My neighbor asked why I put that ramp up to my front door. I said, does it matter? He said, no, not really. I told him because it made my life easier. He said, is there a way to make it less obvious? I guess it mattered. I remember my church asked why I like gospel music. I asked, does it matter? She said, no, not really. I told her that it connects me with my Southern Christian childhood. She said, I think you're in denial about your oppression. I guess it mattered. My God asked me, do you love yourself? I said, does it matter? She said, yes. I said, how can I love myself? I am gay, Latino, disabled, and a Christian in a hostile climate. She said, that is the way I made you. Nothing will ever matter again. So thank you, Al, Smith, or Jones, whichever one you want to be at.
Good morning. My name is Al Smith. And along with my partner, Curtis Jones, we co-chair the Welcoming Congregation Committee. As most of you know, we are currently on a path to becoming a designated welcoming congregation. Part of this path is conducting workshops designed to challenge and inform us about ways we could become more welcoming to the LGBTQ community. To date, we have conducted 6 of the 14 available workshops offered. When we took on this project, Curtis and I were apprehensive. We didn't get together on our, so we kind of overlap a little bit. So today, especially since this project had been started once and quietly laid to rest soon after. Well, I am happy to say the response has been overwhelmingly positive. We have had a consistently large turnout for each and every workshop, and because of this, we have decided to offer more or even all of the workshops offered. We also felt that the question, why are we doing this? Aren't we already welcoming enough? Continues to be on people's mind. Kurt and I haven't done our job if this is still being asked at the sixth workshop. I'm not sure we can ever put this question to rest, but maybe by making this a little more personal, we can get one step closer. We understand that we are all different, and discrimination runs across all lines: age, class, gender, race, appearance, single, childless, education, just to name a few. How many of you have ever been discriminated against at some time or another in your life? Yeah, I think most of us have. How many of you have been discriminated because of your weight? Your weight? I mean, you know, most people, when they think of discrimination because of their weight, they think because of maybe being a large person. But when I met Kurt, he had, I think it was a 25-inch waist. 27-inch waist, okay. So Kurt was quite small. And I remember I was the manager of an apartment complex, and Kurt and I lived there, and we knew most of the people that lived there, but there was somebody that just recently moved in, and we were all sitting around talking, and the assumption that because Kurt was so thin, the question he automatically asked if Kurt was gay. I mean, had AIDS, because he was thin. And, you know, of course, several of the people that we knew there came to his defense, and, you know. But it's just those kinds of things that, I mean, you don't think of people being thin having been discriminated against being weight, but that been about their weight, but that was obviously a discrimination. When Curtis and I attend Christmas at my family's, it's nice to see the reaction on my sister's face when her husband has bought her that iPhone she has been wanting. She screams, jumps up and down, and runs over and hugs and kisses him. Everybody is smiling and excited to see the love shared by these two. You take that love seriously. Fast forward to Kurt handing me my gift, the laptop I have been whining about for months. I am so excited, and I nudge him, smile, and say thank you. What I want to do is scream, jump up and down, run over and hug and kiss him. But even after 21 years, I still do not feel comfortable showing affection towards Kurt around my family. Do you think our love is seen as meaningful? No. When we walk down the street about dusk, I want to reach out and take his hand. Sorry. Do I? No. I'm afraid of getting beat up. When my family would get together for a long weekend at my dad's, my sisters would crawl into bed alongside their husbands. Would I crawl into bed alongside Kurt? No. We slept in separate beds. While I'm at work, coworkers talk about their significant others, what they did for the weekend, how they went out to a lovely dinner before going to a movie. Do I talk about what Kurt and I did? No, I talk about how my dog peed on the floor on Saturday. I could be fired from my job just because I love Kurt. Now, these are just a few of the many obstacles we face on a day-to-day basis. Some of the legal challenges we face come out of an economic view. No domestic partner insurance benefits. They are offered at only 211 of the Fortune 500 companies, 198 of more than 3,000 colleges and universities, 6,811 out of 114 million private employers, and 10 of the 51 state governments. Texas is not one of them. Even in states with domestic partner benefits, same-sex couples have fewer tax breaks, since without federal recognition of their status, health coverage is taxed as income. For example, a gay employee who earns $60,000 a year and receives domestic partner benefits for his or her family would pay $875 in taxes for that coverage, while a heterosexual employee in an identical situation pays nothing. A gay couple getting married in a state where same-sex marriage is legal is denied the 1,138 legal protections that come with marriage, like property rights, Social Security benefits, and taxation. Or you can buy some of these most basic rights, among them will filing, which costs $720 for both individuals, directions for disposition of remains, $180, and designation of guardian before need, another $180. You would spend $1,325 on legal documents on legal costs associated with obtaining partner documents to gain the power of attorney, health care decision making, and inheritance rights granted through legal marriage. All the rights we have to buy come with a $50 marriage certificate. I'm sorry, marriage license. But same-sex families can't protect themselves completely, especially in granting medical power of attorney. Because Texas law doesn't recognize same-sex relationships, it allows virtually any interested party to challenge the legitimacy of a partner's decision-making abilities or visitation rights. Family, friends, clergy, neighbors, even a medical professional could deny access and bring a lawsuit. We deserve the same rights, and we deserve to feel welcomed at least one place in our life where we meet to learn about love and compassion, about service to our community, about treating each other as equals. For me, that place is here, at UU Fellowship Galveston. And now on a lighter note, it is with great joy to announce that on November 6th, the LGBT community helped make history as voters across the nation rejected homophobia practically en masse to protect our civil rights and affirm our humanity. We've listed our wins so often since that Tuesday that they now roll like a litany off our tongues. President Obama, reelected. Marriage equality's disheartening record of defeat at the ballot box, reversed. America's first openly gay senator on her way to Washington, and a cadre of lesbian, gay, and bisexual representatives stepping up to take her place in the House. As this election cycle comes to a close and our community celebrates some historic gains, we must remember that we can't linger there long. Our journey toward a better America is not over. It's just getting started. The days ahead represent the best opportunity we've been given to secure full LGBT equality in our country, including our military. But we won't get there by patting one another on the back. We'll get there by rolling up our sleeves and marching right back into the fight. It's time to make some history again. Thank you.
Thank you both.